Well, thank you very much to Steve and to Paul Casey and all involved in Oakvale for inviting me. This is going to be the night where I reveal everything. So almost all my poetry comes from this book. It's by James Clarence Mangan. I just kind of changed the words around it. So I'm going to show how I do that tonight. So a collage from James Clarence Mangan called The Lock, Cork. As a wee story at the end of this. Apparently, Padraig Pearse visited Cork sometime before 1916, obviously. And he met, as he would, Mr. Corkery. And, of course, the Corkonian was very proud of the lock, it being not something you often come across in cities, a natural reservoir like this and a source of leisure. So he showed Padraig Pearse around, and Padraig Pearse's comment was, "You'd think they'd drain it," which I think is a sign that Padraig Pearse has a sense of humour that nobody suspected. that appears near the end of the poem. Cork's lock. Tangentially, the sustained crash of metal passage traffic of encased bodies liberating the same body from anywhere into anywhere, a line covers nothing. This line's not ends, extends not yet forever, signs too slow, we must learn from the artists and accelerate, that is, exchange. Anything, the strip of violence, but entropy, but inertia, but if you can spare a time here, it curves away into closure as when a line returns to itself, that is, a body. Here is a reserve. Salutary round. On the water's green girdle, easy concourse of geese and pedestrian, freewheeling cyclist, recyclist, epicyclist, past meditative angulars, eyeing the other elements occluding body, a turn of bodies revealed at their own pace, the around each curve as the breeze enters with hermetic birds and the leaves utter that once in holiday weather, Pearse rising Corkonian Corkery, you'd think they'd drain it. Overlooking, the 1950s windows are blinded, but only kind sunshine enters this unused hollow to light the swan's self-ceremonies, the parabolizing tennis ball lifted from a hurley, metabolism of shouts across water, of brightness, of shouts across distance, of brightness off water, of green lounging, of the birds' ascents and descents, of the hidden source of the island's dark thicket setting, freedom. So tell the rumors that they are welcome, but there is one law, that every carp or rod they pierce and lift towards a gasping death must be returned to life. Night's return starts the mirrored illuminations, and beams lance on the reconstituted waters, sees momentarily the ducks form the near trunk, something on the water in one sweep. But the floating swan remains a pale cipher, and the dark island recedes, gathers in upon itself a hunched obscurity. Only stewards cross to the moist and tangled nesting ground, treading soft-footed around the egg's mottled microcosms. In the dead season, they place at its edge the image of a child in view of the city's transposition, exposed, open-armed in the cold to the firmaments, slow, silent revolution. So this is a relatively short one. And it's about my daughter, Ella. And it's probably the one poem that hasn't involved much premeditation. came by a rather romantic trajectory in that she was born one day and I was forced to be in the birth room. And then that night woke up in the middle of the night in a sweat, obviously, and had a poem ready to hand. Next day I was disgusted by it, but I'm going to cut it down a bit, it's alright. So this is one third of the original poem called Ella. This purple daisy, solemn, dancing, irritated by touch of space, daughter apparently, or astronaut, still cord-bound to the other world, chancing the outside. Certainly traveller, braver, of difficult passage for this manifestation within an arm's length, not here. As is the case with most poets these days, you need a livelihood. My livelihood, like Thomas McCarthy's, is in a library. And one day I had the good or misfortune to have to receive the Nag Hammurabi Library, which is a collection of books from about 400 or 500 AD. They are the constituent texts of the Gnostic heresy. If you know anything about the Gnostic heresy, it's one response to the idea of evil or failure in the world. If you decide, well, the world is botched, there must be another god. If you look into things, you'll understand this. So it divides people into two communities. There are those who are in the know, who are the Gnostics. That's where it comes to the word gnosis, to know, and those who don't. And what intrigued me about this was this idea of having a whole universe which was based as the church would have seen it. Because when you read about the Gnostics, it generally comes to a character called Irenaeus of Lyon, who's a bishop who lived in France, who wrote a long book against the heretics, but quoted almost everything they'd written in the process. So as far as he was concerned, the church was concerned, these people were utterly in error. They had no idea. Their idea of the universe was entirely wrong. And reading the Gnostics, it does seem very phantasmagoric. So the idea of actually putting together a universe that's entirely wrong was what started me off with this. It's quite long. There are 20 sections, though some of them are only a line or two long. And it goes a bit like this. There are cars. There are codes and terminals. There is a sea that howls. There are stars, material fires describing letters at the eye's limit. There are three classes of men, of clay, of flesh, and divine. There are houses, isolated and clustered. In each shell, individual lives. There are signs. There are no rivers. There are bushes from other continents planted by hotels. There are wet periods, there are dry periods. There is up, down, to the left, to the right, before and behind. There are cities that spread like organisms. There are organisms that are nothing like cities. There are churches, mosques, and meeting halls, as many as there are prophets. There are armies, maneuvering by day, maneuvering by night. There are tooths, brushes and shower heads. There are serpents. There is prosperity, flowing from prosperity. There is loss. One. Drunkenness is dark, complement to the fluorescent rod. Two. If the demiurge did not exist, he would have to be invented, thus bringing about a third order of creation, the lowest and most ungodly. Three. By countless conduits, all corners of existence are connected. Tunnels, vents, drains, ducts, motorways, tubes, corridors, shafts, underpasses, sewers, escalators, pipes. Lateral angels they minister between. Some are lit and bigger than palaces. Some roar like lions, shaken by the velocity of their contents. 4. Periodically, though its appearance in the world erases islands, flattens mountains, ends tribes of men, they summon the tree of knowledge. There are cars, there are codes and terminals, there is a sea that howls, there are lights in the sky, some move. There are 3 classes of men, of clay, of flesh, and divine. 5. That thought you offer in 10 centuries will reappear, grow, and blossom, to be planted in the courtyard of the church, where each year it will bear fruit. But as it sprouts now, it is arch heresy, a weed poisonous to stock, to be sought out, rooted up, and thrown on the fire. 6. Los Angeles, Berlin, Lagos, Seoul, Rome, Sao Paulo, Jerusalem. 7 empty thrones. From them, power and condemnation, though no man judges. 7. Winter again. The sun entombed. We move to God's north. 8. There is an ocean not wholly contained, where the letters lack a fissure scores the bed. It is divided into zones marked by the lines of cables measured between the wrecks. Some are dead, the light fading in green depths. In others a monster patrols, gun grey scanning the limits. In some, the shoals and solitaries press all together, the waters, like oil, shifting. 9. But what on the other side of death? Why only silence for consolation? What valve between? 10. Air rushes into a wound, wind blowing sparks into outer darkness. There are houses, isolated and clustered, in each shell individual lives. There are signs, there are no rivers. There is plant and earth. There are wet periods, there are dry periods. There is up, down, to the left, to the right, before, and behind. 11. Those in the know are transported from one heaven to another that is much the same. The blind, though in motion, remain, are nowhere. 12. Chainsaws whining in the beginning, violence, the Lord clearing the fourfold woods for the material, for the idea, for the making. 13. I could represent it by tracing in the dust that union of letters that is emptiest, then cross it out, that too inadequate. 14. This yeasty world nearing completion buds, appears among the data sheets, the cosmogony. 15. Stone flows slowly, like a stairs, at the base of which a suppliant waits, indefinitely. About him flit the licensed, ascending, descending. There are cities that spread like organisms. There are organisms that are nothing like cities. There are churches, mosques, and meeting halls. As many as there are prophets, there are armies. 16. Superman, priest, genius, all behind us. Knowledge must descend from general ignorance be formed the living Adam. 17. The mind shuts like a trap. God proliferates. First 2, then 7, then 49, then as many as the lettered numbers, little levers working the world of things. 18. Better the saved, if they must live in this world, should do so among the contentious, the animal-souled subjugators of men, than that an exalted one in a narrow space between serried matter and the toss of will should have to serve with a formula beneath the tongue. 19. Only in storms the beyond. But the weather is disturbed. The voice, the wind, voices, a confusion of tongues. 20. We are anticipations. There are toothbrushes and shower heads. There are serpents There is accumulation that repeats and stops. That's a bit more than a third of the way through, so I think it's a good time for you to drink up there. I thought that while you're stuck with my physical voice, you could probably do it with some other voices in the night. So I'm going to put a little interval in. I'm going to read from two Cork-based poets and then match them up with two other poets, just to give it something different. So to start with, we have Dara Breen. You may have heard him at the Spring Festival at the Munster Literary Centre. I'm going to read two from his book, Whale. And I'm going to match it up with one poem by Mr. James Clarence Mangan. So this is by Dara Breen. It's called Pieta. Good Friday. In a muddy field in West Cork, we bore witness to a newborn calf that lay twitching around the cord of an electric fence as its other heavy mother hung her huge, awkward head over it, moaning, trying to pacify the terrified creature. We climbed over the ditch, you holding the dog's back, as I eased the electric wire from the calf's chest with a spear of stick. We left the mother to lick the wet slime of burnt stuff from the calf's bony form, and the early sun began to glint like a fishing lure through the grey clouds. This is also by Dara. It's called Alice Maher's Sculptures in the Afterlife. They crowded the narrow quay in their gowns of hair, stumbling over the uneven cobbles of animal tongues. Their thumbs and fingers were wired together in prayer, as the icy water rattles and cackles with empty snail shells that are thrown against the harbour wall. The low sky is studded with pure salt and stings the open wounds from which they bleed thorns. They must wait for everything to finally grow still again, returning to the silent state of the perpetual penance. Somebody has dreamt them, and now they wait to be allowed to die again. So Dara has a habit of returning to the theme of winter, so I thought Mr. Mangan's Siberia might go well with that. Siberia by James Clarence Mangan. In Siberia's wastes, the ice wind's breath woundeth like the tooted steel. Lost Siberia doth reveal only blight and death. Blight and death alone, no summer shines. Night is interblent with day. In Siberia's wastes alway, the blood blackens, the heart pines. In Siberia's wastes no tears are shed, for they freeze within the brain. Naught is felt but dullest pain, pain acute yet dead, pain as in a dream. When years go by, funeral pastes yet fugitive, when man lives and doth not live nor die. In Siberia's wastes are sands and rocks, nothing blooms of green or soft, but the snow peaks rise aloft at the gaunt ice blocks, and the exile there is one with those. They are part, and he is part, for the sands are in his heart, and the killing snows. Therefore in those wastes none curse the Tsar. Each man's tongue is cloven by the north blast, who heweth nigh with sharp scimitar. To such doom each drees, till hunger gnawn and cold slain, he at length sinks there, yet scarce more a corpse than ere his last breath was drawn. And of course, 1846 is the date put against this, which is a pretty significant date in Irish history. So, someone other might have helped again. This is from Rachel Warner. Three short pieces from a sequence she's writing. I spotted the fact that it kind of runs parallel to Madame Butterfly. There's a dead giveaway, of course, because there were illustrations in the copy she gave me. She didn't mention that there's also a parallel running with Dido and Aeneas, the myth, and presumably the Purcell opera as well. And she calls it Fine Lament. So three sections, and they're not consecutive. You'll have to excuse me. Watch you, pained left side, straggle, and what was it when your hair fell off? And there, with loyalty, my scratched face, your treacherous gut, sink left and burden chastised you, gripped my hand, like you meant it, made cry, the high note, face kicked and cracked in your ridiculous death, prying made and broken in divisive air, gee, like screaming, line crack and unpleasant, all very Middle England, crushed velvet, very 90s, and ambition and arrogance, and also ran, eye back, cut and rewritten, care dread and guilt. My glorious catharsis, your sharp breath, or better, death, Japanese child with blue eyes, quivering hand, will dance for you, death, death, but never again that dancing. Answer, today my name is sorrow, a warship, my love is turncoat, all my life and faith, kicking plastic flowers, violets and roses, that yearning. Looking up our betters in a box, fringed for softness. And I'm going to stick a little bit of Trevor Joyce onto that. This is work from the Chinese of Liu Xiaolin, and it's actually written for Patrick Alvin. And I'll just give you the first section. Capital counts. Through this long piece, arterial routes intersect with narrow lanes. Beasts of burden, black and white, drag coaches of sweet-smelling wood, and jade-inlaid sedan chairs cross-recross the town. Past celebrity glitz, old money dens, golden accessories circulate. Dragons gnaw rich canopies glinting in the early sun. Phoenix vomits glittering lace under crimson evening clouds. One stretch of gossamer encompasses the trees, assemblies of magnificent birds unify the groves with song. Called 11 Pieces for Austria-Hungary. And my brother, who's down the back, decided to up tents and move to Slovakia at one stage, and he learned the language, so we managed to have a couple of holidays over there. And one of the things that strikes you is that how much of the place, despite the sediment of communism over the top of it, preserves little enclaves of the old Austria-Hungarian Empire. So this poem more or less takes little coloured fragments out of that empire and treats them like something that's from a civilization that has disappeared, but also happens to be something we've built a lot of our own partial civilization upon. So there's 11 pieces, obviously. Would you abolish the robot? Emancipate noise, springtime in the woods. The village voices rise like birds. Autumn in the capital. The maestro orchestrates cries of blood. The search party has occupied the mine. There they will uncover the secrets of cancer. Baroque exfoliations, falling blocks. Far away, the brown hut in the woods. We cannot speak. Masonry encrusts our tongues. Far away, the brown hut in the woods. This house in disorder, fists, tongues, ink bottles, filling the space of breath. Far away, the brown hut in the woods. Here, at the least, be honest, he told us, as engineers. A devil's art of multiplication to set down roots anywhere. A wooden machine with steel strings, the musician's mask, to pass through boundaries. A theatre night in peasant's language to excite cartographers. A calculator with punch-hold cards to list the nameless, fix no man's land. Elements of a new geometry, round head, square house, fantastic shape of a large dog. Erect a tower, where, not on the ground, the land shifts as we shift, the land pulls apart if we sit down, not in the sky, aviators puncture the battlements of light. Erect a tower, there, where the ground should be, erect a tower in the abyss, and call it civilized behavior. My home, a horror, staring east. Stone gorges, 400 years. Coffee's chambers, arabesque. Crescent pastries before the shadowed mirror. They gleam on dark wood. Palms, women, turn on themselves. Medicine, jurisprudence, art. The state is a harem, masterless. Pubescence drift among islands of flesh, undulating hair. Murder is a password to the palace of tongues. I think I'll have done. That's fine. How am I doing this time? Okay. One short one. What Elizabeth Bone? Hands up, who knows Elizabeth Bone? Okay, we have a portrait of Elizabeth Bone here. Her face, a mask. Brittle enough shell of makeup and restraint. Japanese in its long-boned economy. She sensed that the common art holding body in the sensible wear of the 1930s might not suffice, nor that older effort at ascendancy elegance, considering the face. Even the face might betray, topple the person's tin supports unexpectedly, one moon-stunned evening, or in the ripples of sex, admit destruction. She knew that features have mold of the tongueless howl released through dividing arch at epidurus, and so, lest they mimic the unconfrontable, she assumed this different mask, dismissive, of what for so long pressed her shoulder, caught the eye's corner, glare of buildings, black shells, still burning with the dawn. This century, her line threading the ruins, brittle enough about the everyday, dreamily exact, her face a mask. Thank you.